Hi, this is Joe Mama. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Teresa Wilkie. Today, host Latara Smith talks with Judy Henderson. She was granted clemency by Governor Greitens after serving 35 years for a crime she did not commit. Judy is doing work to help others who have been wrongfully convicted gain their freedom. Later in the hour, Melvin Merritt talks with Gina Hanna about Beauty for Ashes and their work inside and outside the walls, as well as how you can help those who are incarcerated and those who are returning rebuild their lives. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Now here is Latara and her guest.
Hi, welcome to 90.1 FM KKFI. I'm your host, Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project. And today I am blessed with the honor and the privilege to interview Mrs. Judy Henderson. Mrs. Henderson served approximately 36 years within the Missouri Department of Corrections, and Ms. Henderson was released when our former Governor Eric Greitens was leaving office. Ms. Henderson was one of the few individuals whom he granted a clemency and allowed her to be released from prison. Ms. Henderson, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me, Laura.
Thank you so much for coming on. So as you can see, I've kind of introduced you a little bit, but how about you also follow through with a brief introduction of yourself?
Okay. Yes, I was incarcerated for 36 years after I was married recently, divorced like 9 months before the incarceration with two children. I came into the prison system and utilized everything that the system had to offer and created other programs and pioneered a lot myself.
Right.
I have several different degrees in different vocations through the system. And as soon as I got out, actually former Governor Greitens came to the Chillicothe prison on December 20th, 2017 and released me immediately that day I served, and I was granted a pardon June 1st on his last day in office.
Wow, what a blessing. What a blessing.
Yes.
I remember.
A miracle.
Yes, it was. I remember when you were released, seeing the stories, because it was most definitely, you know, all over social media when you were blessed with that opportunity to regain your freedom. So it's really, really nice to know that. And what's even more awesome, and I'm just, you know, so happy to have this opportunity to interview you, because we get a chance and an opportunity to bring people, you know, to bring awareness to what you are doing now that you've been released from prison. You did not get out of prison and decide, hey, I'm out, this is all about me, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to do me. You actually came out of prison and said, hey, I've got to be a voice. I've got to fight.
Yes.
I've got to do some things because, you know, as you know, in our previous conversation, I myself am an ex-offender. So I most definitely understand the fight. I respect the fight. And I'm 100% behind you and with you in this fight, because it is
a
very, very important fight. But why don't you take the time to tell our listeners, Ms. Henderson, about the few things few organizations that you're involved in and some of the things that you are doing here in our community to make a difference.
Okay. Well, of course, you know, 3 weeks after I was released, like I had thought while I was incarcerated, I would come out and just do what I needed to do to adjust to this world and go on with my life. And that's exactly the opposite of what I did. I did go on with my life, but God had a different plan.
Right.
You know, he had a mission for me to do, and which was my purpose in my whole incarceration, was to reach out and reach back to those that are still incarcerated.
Right.
And with that being said, I reached out to find out who, 3 weeks after I was released, I found out that a geriatric globe bill that I had been working on during incarceration for 4 years that had not moved very far in the House or the Senate was picked up by a freshman state representative.
Wow.
In the House. So I, my attorney knew who he was and reached out to him and told him who I was. And he is a state representative, Tom Hannigan, out of St. Louis, Missouri. And we met, had lunch, and we have been partners in this ever since.
Well, you know, that is really awesome. But what I want the people who are listening, I want our listeners to pay attention to something that, I'm going to pull out something you just said. You said when you were incarcerated, you put together this particular bill, correct?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, so you were in prison and you were, I mean, you were working it, girl. You were using the time that you had to do something positive, something that was going to bless others, you know, not just yourself, but others. And wow, I commend, I commend you on that. So where is the bill now? Where's the bill now?
Okay. The bill came very, very close to passing this year. It got the farthest we've ever gotten it, and without any objection from the prosecutors. We had no testimony opposing it.
Right.
So the only thing that stopped us was time ran out. The session ended too soon. Had we had another week, it was, I mean, it was right on the edge of getting through. Because it already got through the House.
Right.
And it got through the Senate, and we were sending it back to the House, and it was just, day and the session ended, so we have to start all over.
Wow. Well, you know what? It sounds like a very worthy bill. I mean, I believe it would be something that would most definitely be positive, you know. So, you know, I'm going to be praying for that to come through because, you know, we most definitely need that. You know, we do have a lot. I don't know if people understand this, but we do have a lot of elderly senior citizens who are incarcerated. And not just do we have them incarcerated, but, you know, some of them are very ill. And, you know, and that wow, this bill would really help a lot because it could take some of the financial burdens off the state from having to house some of them and provide all their medical, you know, and things as such. So, wow.
Exactly.
You know, wonderful, wonderful bill here that you guys put together. Now, tell me a little bit about the national organization that you are a member of and tell us a little bit about what you all do in that particular organization.
Okay. Well, I was given the privilege and the invitation to be able to speak at the National Council of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated women and girls when they held their conference in October in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I went to the entire conference for 4 days and spoke, and they were always doing things on the national level as far as, you know, getting clemencies granted through the president.
Right.
But they had yet actually tackled the clemency process in the state prisons.
Okay.
So then I got a call in January and by the director, executive director, Andrea James, and she wanted to know if I would be interested in spearheading a national campaign for clemencies in each state in the nation.
Wow.
And oh my gosh, kid, at first it just totally overwhelmed me because I thought, me? Why me? I do not know anything about this.
Right, right.
You know, and then I thought, you know what? God is opening doors and all I need to do is walk through them.
Right, right, right.
Because he doesn't call the equipped. He equips those that he calls.
You're sure right. You are exactly correct.
So therefore, that being said, I thought, okay, I am not going to let fear overwhelm me. I am going to do this for, in the best of my ability. And so we started that process. And the process first began in March. And so what we do is there's every state has someone in it that is trying to find the women that would meet a certain criteria that we require in order to be a part of this clemency campaign.
Okay.
And to know what that criteria is, they can always go to the website or there is a link that you have, I believe, Latara, that they can go to and understand what it is that we're doing. And we're trying to bring awareness to every governor across the nation that this, the governors have the power. They want to talk about criminal justice reform. Well, it needs to start with them, not the House, not the Congress, and the Senate. But, yes, they need to be a part of it, of course, because they have to change the laws. But the governors need to be an example and use the power that they have that they seldom ever use.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. Wow.
So, you know, whenever they get on their platform and this is what they want done and this is what they want their House and their Senate to do, then I think they need to lead by example. And I'm challenging each of them to do so.
Well, I hope and pray that they're paying attention, you know. They'll listen to this interview and pay attention and most definitely be able to see, you know, what it is that you're wanting to do.
Yes.
You know, most definitely so. So how could one join that particular organization?
Okay. It's $5 an annual fee. Mm-hmm. And they go to the link, and that's all they have to do. Go to the link. It will explain everything. It's very simple. And they can also become involved in the National Clemency Campaign in each state. If there's other states that where they happen to know people, they can encourage them to also get involved in the other states around the nation.
Right.
And presently, Latara, we're doing a postcard phase where everybody sends one postcard in a week until July 31st. Saying whatever it is they would choose to say about urging the governor to use his power of clemency.
Yes.
And they can word that however they choose to word it. We want hundreds, if not thousands, of postcards going into the governor's office once a week.
And that most definitely will send a message, a very valuable message, might I add.
Mm-hmm.
And so when when you guys get kind of further into that, you know, well, most definitely. I'm 100% behind you. Most definitely.
Thank you.
And
Thank you. Now,
is there a website? Do you know the website that one can go to maybe get some more information on this? Or
they can go to the National Council website.
Okay. All right. Do you have that address
on
you?
And just put in National Clemency Campaign, and it will come up, and it'll give them all the information. Because on July 10th, as of this date, I think it's still the same.
Okay.
I'm in the process of getting a quilt made, and each state is that's involved with every woman's name on it in a square that we are taking before the governors.
Okay, awesome.
And we will be going to the Capitol to take that quilt. So we will have that information on there as well.
Okay. And for our listeners, I want to make sure and let you guys know a link to the website for this national organization that Ms. Henderson is referring to is actually on our Jaws of Justice page at KKFI.org. So you guys can go there and you'll be able to see the link to that particular organization that Mrs. Henderson is referring to. Now, Ms. Henderson, let's talk a little bit about your case, because I know that you were one of a few that Governor Greitens had signed and released and let go. Can you mm-hmm. tell me what happened? You know, what happened with the governor's office? Did they find things that happened in your case?
Yes. I had been before seven governors, and actually six governors. Governor Eric Greitens was the last one that I went before, and he granted it. The number of God's completion. So the parole board, come to find out, had recommended my release three different times.
Wow. 2003,
2007, and 2011.
Well, what happened?
Governor. They refused to do it because politics were more important than human lives. And that's how I have to say it, because I don't know of any other reason why they would not have done it.
Wow, wow.
Now, they create that parole board, and they appoint those parole board members because they trust their judgment.
Right.
To direct the governor on what to do in these types of clemency investigations.
Well, you know, I have a question, because I know that you had a co-defendant, and your co-defendant was acquitted. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, what?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that situation.
Okay, what occurred is he committed the murder, and I was present. And he, we both had the same attorney representing both of us at the time.
Wow.
I was very naive whenever it came to the system. I was the oldest of eight children, and no family member had ever been in trouble, so we did not know how the system worked.
Right.
He was more savvy in that area than I was.
Wow.
And so getting both of us to have one attorney, I did not think anything about it because I thought, well, you know, I'm going to have two different opinions. They're going to have my best interest at heart.
Right.
But that is not what happened. It was completely the opposite. He was only there to find out what my defense was going to be to ensure that I did not testify against him or give any information that he did not want me to give.
Wow. Wow. Now, at one point, did Governor Greitens' office, you know, did they find out about some witnesses and, you know, someone being paid? And then there was a situation where there was a plea offer and you were never made aware of that plea offer?
Yes, yes. The attorney that represented both of us was told about a plea offer from the prosecutor,
wow.
the chief prosecutor. And he never delivered that offer to me. And also, I want to add, Latara, that whenever Governor Greitens did talk to, actually, it was my prosecutor at the time, who later on became a presiding judge and in the circuit court. And he came forward and said and contacted my attorney and made it known that out of all the cases he had retried, I'm the only case that had ever given him nightmares. And he wanted to do everything he could to help me come home.
Wow. And he was a prosecutor formerly on the case.
He was the chief prosecutor on the case.
Wow.
Yes. And so, I mean, that alone is very unheard of.
Oh, yes, it is. Most definitely so. So I take my hat off to them, most definitely. To him, most definitely, because I know situations where prosecutors, you know, of course, they move up the rank. They go from prosecutor to a judge and then, you know, on up whatever political ladder they may want to go up. But I've seen prosecutors get in headship positions as such and not even think about righting a wrong, you know.
No.
So I really commend that particular prosecutor for that, you know. Most definitely.
And we had coffee afterwards. After I came home, I went to Springfield, and we met and had coffee. So, and that's the first time we'd met since he sentenced me, since I was sentenced in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a meeting. It was emotional, and I had to thank him for being honest and stepping forward.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
He said it took a lot of courage because he didn't know how it was going to affect his political career. He didn't know how it would affect how his peers would look at him.
And you said, and that's something right there. Let me just say this really quick. What you just said was worth $1 million.
Yes.
I do believe that we have some prosecutors, and they want to do what's right.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the political pressure, because of the...
Yeah.
You know, they get backed in a corner to where if I do what's right, that this is not, you know, this could come back and bite me later. So I can imagine how the prosecutor, who is now a judge, said, you know, couldn't sleep. I've often said, I don't know how some of the prosecutors sleep at night, knowing some of the things they do. So to hear you say that is like, wow. You know, it's like, wow. So, and even then, let's just touch base really quick here. You were there, but you actually did not commit the murder, correct?
No, not at all. No, absolutely not.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you were there. And so, you know, I hope this also sends a message to people, because what is that? What, the felony murder law? Is that what it is?
Yes.
And, you know, you don't have to be the one who actually kills someone. But if you were there, whether you knew this was going to happen or even if you didn't know a murder was getting ready to be committed, you are going to be 9 times out of 10 charged with felony murder. And you get the same outcome as the person who actually did it. And I think I think that needs to be changed here in the state of Missouri, because, you know, to me, you were an innocent and wrongly convicted individual. Were you there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you were. Did you commit the crime? No, you didn't. But here in Missouri, you're just as guilty as the one who actually committed the crime. And I don't think that's fair.
And Latar, you know, that's what is filling up a lot of our prisons.
Yes.
Is situations exactly like that.
Exactly.
Where
yes.
they are, you know, they're not the culprit of the crime. They're not the perpetrator, but they happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly.
And some of them end up getting more time than what the actual perpetrator does because he or she ends up, whichever it may be, ends up plea bargaining.
I've seen it happen all the time. People
with a person that actually did not do anything, they believe in the system and think, oh, if I take this to trial, I know the truth is going to come out. The truth does not always matter.
Yeah, tell me about that one. Most definitely.
Yes.
So, most
because
definitely.
That's what's filling our prisons up. You know, there needs to be changes in our laws whenever it comes to. There has to be a degree there has to be different degrees of sentencing somebody in each felony case.
Okay.
And there's so much disparity of sentencing, not only from county to county, but courtroom to courtroom in the same courthouse.
Right. Well, I tell you what, I commend you for the things that you're doing. And I want you to know if it's anything that the Casey Freedom Project can help you with, you know, please reach out to me and let me know because I'm 100% behind you. You know, we're coming to the end of the show. So I want to make sure that I get this, the website that we were speaking of to this organization that Ms. Henderson is part of, which is a National Council of Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. The website is www.nationalcouncil.us. Okay. Now, Ms. Henderson, you can take us out in this interview. What are some of the last things you want to say to our listeners?
Well, I want the listeners to know that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yes.
But it takes a community to help with prison reform.
And exactly, prison reentry and reform. You're most definitely correct.
Yes. Yes, we have got to help these offenders whenever they come home. We have to have things set up.
Yes.
And not only for the offender, but also for the family that's about to receive this offender.
That's right. That's right, because it's a process, and people don't understand
that. It is.
It's a process.
Yes.
Well, Ms. Henderson, I thank you so much for coming on the show. People, who, if you want information on the National Association that Ms. Henderson was speaking of, it's www.nationalcouncil.us. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and you all have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Now the calendar for the week of June 10th. Corey's Network invites survivors of murder to their weekly workshop to learn how to deal with grief, the media, police investigations, court, and moving forward after a homicide has occurred. This is a workshop, not a grief group. You should bring something to take notes with, and please include only those individuals mature enough in age to deal with issues being covered during the meeting. The workshop, How to Deal with the Media, will be held tonight, Monday, June 10th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Church of the Four Corners, 14300 East U.S. Highway 40, KCMO. The church is located east of the Hy-Vee at 40 Highway and Nolan Road. For more information and listings of future workshops, call 816-834-9161 or email coreysnetwork@gmail.com or look for Corey's Network on Facebook. Human Trafficking, Today's Slavery, a speech by Victor Boutros, founding director and CEO of the Virginia-based Human Trafficking Institute, will be held at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, June 11, at the Plaza Branch Library, 4801 Main Street, KCMO. Mr. Boutros will examine the modern scourge of human trafficking that claims hundreds of thousands of victims in the U.S., more than 40 million worldwide, and efforts to combat it. You are invited to join Normal KC on Wednesday, June 12th from 4 to 6 p.m. at PlexPod, 300 East 39th Street, KCMO, 39th and McGee, to talk to city leaders about the buffer zone for medical marijuana dispensaries. Councilman Jermaine Reed has proposed an ordinance of 750 feet away from schools, daycares, and churches. Article 14, legalizing medical marijuana, prohibits placing an undue burden on patients accessing their medicine. Some feel the proposed buffer zone would constitute an undue burden on the patients of Kansas City and are proposing a buffer zone of 300 feet or less. The Prison Story Project presents On the Row, stories from Arkansas's death row inmates, a scripted reading of the stories of 10 men on Arkansas's death row, Thursday, June 13th, 7:30 p.m. at St. Paul's Episcopal Church, 11 East 40th Street, 40th and Main, in KCMO. This content is for mature audiences and may not be appropriate for children. You can find out more about the Prison Story Project at their website, nwaprisonstories.com. My name is Elise, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Up next is Melvin Merritt and his guest.
Good morning. Welcome to a live edition of Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 FM on your dial. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. In the studio with me is Miss Gina Hanna. She is the founder of Beauty for Ashes Ministry. She is here to tell us all about BFA, which is Beauty for Ashes Ministry. And she has a guest, too, in the studio, and from the experience that she has had, and her name is Miss Imali. I'd like to take this moment and welcome both of y'all to Jaws of Justice.
Well, thank you, Melvin. Thanks for inviting us.
Yes, sure. Thank you.
My first question is, tell us a little bit about Beauty for Ashes, the background, and how did you come up with Beauty for Ashes as well?
Okay. Well, Beauty for Ashes is a prison ministry. It is a Christ-centered prison ministry, so the name comes from the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's from Isaiah 61. If you check out that passage, it talks about the great exchange that we get through Jesus. So when we came up with the name, it came from our own personal journey of going to prison, drug addiction, and struggling through that for a long time, and then getting this great exchange of getting a crown of beauty for the ashes of my life.
And you mentioned about your life. So what background do you have in terms of coming up with this type of ministry?
Yeah, it did come from my own personal journey. I went to prison for really, not to minimize it, but kind of a small crime. I had never been in trouble before, but I sold a quarter bag of marijuana to an undercover cop. Apparently, you're supposed to ask first, and I did not. anyway, I went to, and they put warrants out 2 years later, and they sent me to prison. And so I had this experience of going to prison, kind of having a gut feeling like it was for a reason.
But how much time did you do?
I actually only did 4 months.
4 months,
So it was what they call a 120, and I did drug treatment. It was part of an SIS sentence. So I was blessed that when I walked probation out, honestly, I struggled my addiction the whole time, but for some reason I never got dropped on. So I was able to walk my paper and not get a felony conviction, but I did get this burden because I met these amazing women while I was there. And, you know, I came from a Christian home and a pretty good background, but when I heard the stories of the ladies I met, my new friends that I had met, their stories often had drug abuse in the home or sexual abuse, physical abuse, things that you thought, no wonder you ended up here. So I left kind of with this burden of going, I've got to make a difference. But it took a long time to get there.
and you know, usually when people talk about, you know, prison, the first thing they think about, at least they don't think about 4 months or 3 months in prison. And because prison is surrounded, that whole word surrounds with years.
Yeah.
And so when I heard when you said that you went to prison, the first thing I thought about it was years.
Yeah,
but you mentioned 4 months.
It could have been years. I mean, that was truly because once you're in the system, it's so hard to there's not a lot of chances. The judge told me, you drop dirty one time, you'll go back and do your whole 10-year sentence. For some reason, I never got dropped on, because if they had, I would have gone back and done the whole sentence, but God had other plans.
So when you were in prison, and this is when this vision came to you about starting something called Beauty for Ashes. And
yeah, well, what it was 6 months later after getting out, I was right back in my addiction and frustrated. Like, really, God? Like, I'm really risking a lot. I had a son. Mm-hmm. My oldest is 21 now, but he was a year old at the time.
Okay.
And so I had a conversation. I honestly sitting there smoking a joint, having a conversation with God, because that's what I did. Although at that time, I thought I was going to hell, but I didn't understand the grace of God.
Yes.
But I just asked him, what's this all about? And I could see a wing of the prison. I didn't know what it was we were doing, but I felt like I had this gut feeling that came to me that you will figure out how to get out of this addiction. And when you do, you'll go back. So I didn't know how that was going to happen. And I struggled for another 10 years with this vision of what it was, you know, and I thought it was going to be a performing arts program or something. You know, I was casting this vision everywhere, getting high with my friends, going, someday I'm going back to prison. And they're like, good luck with that.
Would have joined in.
Yeah, exactly. And so, anyway, so when I ended up getting back into church, my grandma just said, Gina, you got to raise your kids in church. So I'm like, but grandma, I'm going to hell. How can I go to church? She's like, you got the wrong message. Go get the right message. And so I learned about the grace of Jesus, that it wasn't about condemnation. It was about his love pursuing me.
Yeah.
And that transformed me. Eventually, I took a class called Oaks of Righteousness, and I got set free from my addiction. And so then I knew I have to take this class back to prison. And before, I mean, it's a longer story than we have time for, but God opened doors, and now we have Beauty for Ashes
and
Reentry.
And I think that when you mentioned, at least you alluded to the fact that, you know, when you got hold to the truth, and because I was thinking about something that is in the big book, so to speak, and it says that if you continue in his word, you are my disciple indeed, and you would know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
That's exactly.
And so I assume that, you know, you got a word or something from a rhema word, so to speak, and that opened up some things in your own mind, and so that put you on the path of right, so to speak.
Yeah, it's exactly, because the truth is, it's a spiritual battle. I mean, in the battle, the word tells us the battle's in our mind, and it's about lies and truth. And so the truth is, once you put your faith in Jesus, you become the righteousness of Christ. It's believing that. That's the hard part. And so the lies come from when I hear that voice of shame that says, you're nothing but a failure, you're an adulterous wife, you're a drug addict, you're you should be ashamed of yourself, you're not worthy of love. And for the ladies that we work with in prison that have had, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, so that tells you you're pretty worthless, you're a piece of trash. I mean, that's the voice of lies. That's what the Bible says, is that the enemy is the father of lies. So you have to identify those lies and just silence them and put the truth in, that you are the righteousness of Christ, you were chosen, that you're a masterpiece, that you were created to do good works with a purpose and a hope. When you believe that, you sin less. You don't, you know, You go, yeah, I don't need to get high anymore. I mean, you know, it just changes. It transforms you.
And you were walking testimony of your own, and yet you brought a young lady in the studio with you by the name of Imali, and a beautiful young lady. She is a walking testimony as well. And I'm going to ask her, give us a little background of your experience, not only with your experience, but with the experience of this Beauty for Ashes ministry.
Yeah, okay. Well, I went to prison for 3 years, and I was actually there when the Beauty for Ashes came to Chillicothe. And when it first started, well, it was rocky, as anything would be when it first begins, but I watched it transform, and God transform it into such a wonderful program. It absolutely changed the way I think and the way I feel about myself and the way I see others and what I want to do to glorify God. And so it's helped me to draw closer to God and to be there for my community and for others who are struggling with the same things that I'm struggling with, addiction and, you know, being abused. And so this journey of just being on that wing was just absolutely amazing. The ladies are very caring and loving, and the classes that you take help you to renew your mind and to think different ways than what you were in the past.
And, you know, usually we, you know, we talk about it, even I think that she mentioned about recidivism. And what is causing you not to, because most people that are listening to this program, and they probably know family members that have been repeatedly going back to prison. And so what is, what are you doing to not be a victim of that?
Yeah, I have support groups. You absolutely have to have a support group and stay in church and put God first in your life. And my son is a big inspiration for that. I don't want to let him down, and I want to make sure that he makes an imprint in his society as well as I. And so that's a big inspiration and helped me to not
And
repeat.
He's in the studio right with us right
yes,
now.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so that's great. So we kind of mentioned before going on air about your people that you associated with prior to going to prison. How is that coming along?
Yeah, it's coming along quite well. I changed my complete circle of who I hang out with, changed places I hang out and people that I used to hang out with. So it was lonely at first coming out of prison, but after you get involved in your community and in the church, you start meeting such a wonderful, great group of people that have changed my life.
Did you see yourself going through this period of loneliness, you know, in order to make this transition from, you know, negative to positive? How did that work for you, being lonely and not being around people that you're more familiar with? How did that affect you? You know, how did it affect you in terms of your loneliness that you mentioned?
Well, I would feel lonely in my room, or, you know, like I didn't have anybody to lean on. And so I went to the Word. I absolutely went to the Word and read and knew the truth. What God says is that He will never leave us or forsake us. Mm-hmm. So I knew He was right there with me and has never left me.
You know, I don't know what it popped in my mind, especially people that maybe be negative with the Word and stuff. Mm-hmm. And anything that's doing something that is positive that will transform a person's life, you know, so be it, you know, regardless of what it is. Mm-hmm. And so if a person can be transformed by the Word of God, then, you know, then applause goes out to that individual, you know, especially when a person coming out of prison, they experience drugs and alcohol addiction and all the above. And especially how was the your family nucleus in terms of what type of family background did you actually was surrounded with when you were growing up?
Yeah, my dad was an alcoholic, and so it was hard growing up. My mom worked all the time, and she had a gambling problem. And so all of the money that were supposed to go to the house and the things that we needed went to the boat, the casinos. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. We went without lights and gas and electricity, you know, just, and there were six of us. So there was quite a mess around the house too, you know, wasn't very clean and tidy. So that's what I grew up with, and actually I got sent into foster care. So I grew up running from foster care to foster care to foster care. So
what was your relationship like with your dad?
It wasn't very good. He, like I said, he was an alcoholic. He would get belligerent and very angry with us, and so
all of this is like a trail straight to prison, you know, because mm-hmm. when you have a family nucleus where your parents is using drugs or gambling or whatever the case may be, and then with that many siblings in the house, it's pretty dysfunctional. And so, you know, the cards wouldn't stack right, so to speak, for you on your behalf. However, there are some people that have, you know, found their way out of that, and thank God, thank God through His grace that you have found the way out through this ministry, Beauty for Ashes. And so what are some of the other things? And before I ask Gina a little bit more about Beauty for Ashes, what are some of the things that you're doing today as it relate to Beauty for Ashes?
Yeah, actually, I just went to Feed the Homeless ministry yesterday, and they were doing singing live, and I did the sign choir there, and so they thought that was beautiful, so they asked me to come and sign for them as well. The sign choir there at Beauty for Ashes is amazing. Glorifying, never knew there were so many ways to glorify God, to praise Him, to just love on Him.
So you do signs. Beautiful.
Yes, yes.
Now, did you learn that during or in prison?
Yes,
or?
Yes, oh, okay. in the ministry, the Beauty for Ashes ministry, yes.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. So now you are in that ministry of signs, and you help people that cannot read or speak.
Yes.
And so you stand up and do those signs and things. That's awesome. Beautiful. Tell us a little bit more about Beauty for Ashes, Gina, I'm talking with, and the founder of Beauty for Ashes. In case you just tune in, we're talking to Gina Hannah. She's the founder of Beauty for Ashes, and she has a guest by the name of Emily, and she's gone and is going through Beauty for Ashes ministry. And you're in tune to KKFI 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. And just ask the question, tell us a little bit more about Beauty for Ashes.
Yeah, so Beauty for Ashes Reentry is the name of our program, and it is in both of the women's prisons now. So we started in Vandalia, in the women's prison there in Vandalia. That's where I had been incarcerated, and that's we started there in 2011. It's a dedicated wing it looks like the treatment wing in a sense, but different. So it's dedicated, but it's a voluntary program. So it doesn't help you get out of prison earlier. I mean, now the parole board is going, we are definitely seeing some. Yeah, because our recidivism rate is only 20%, so it's less than half of what the state's recidivism rate is. It's dedicated, so the ladies voluntarily say, I want to join this program. I know I'm going to give up my TV. I know I'm going to be dedicated to 40 hours a week of coursework and study. But we spend the first 4 months of the program just dealing, I mean, you heard Emily's story here this morning, and we deal with that stuff. Like when you grow up in a home, a dysfunctional home where there's drug addiction or alcoholism, or in her case, gambling, and the kids are being neglected because mom and dad are in their own mess, we go back and deal with that. We help them forgive mom and dad. We help them identify the way that they would, that makes them believe about themselves. And we just take that through what I would say through the cross. I mean, I would say Jesus died for that.
And you know, I think that's interesting that you brought that up, is going back and helping the individual to forgive the person that have actually really caused it. And because sometimes people can harbor that resentment. Yeah. And it doesn't do them any good. And what it does is possibly bring them or send them right back to prison because they can't release their parents or the individuals that have harmed them.
Yeah.
And so it's good that you reach out and make sure that they are healed from that area of their life. So that's awesome.
Because that forgiveness really is the first step of breaking free those roots. So it's those are the roots that cause, I mean, the addiction and the criminal behaviors are just the manifestation of some lot deeper stuff. So our motto is, we are healed at the root of our issues.
That's
and
right.
We're discipled in our faith, and we're ready to serve our families and our communities with a ministry of love. And as you've heard, I mean, she's redeeming her experience by now going back and giving back to her family with her son. We're changing generations, and then we're plugging into our communities. It's about loving God and loving others. So you gotta take that love out.
You know, and I've heard somewhere where it says that that alcoholism or drug addiction is not really the problem. There's something much more deeper than the problem.
Yeah.
What individual does is mask the problem, the real problem, by putting alcohol or drugs in it, and because they think that that would relieve their pain that they have been going through. And for a minute, it probably does help. But after a while, it turns on them because they can't manage their own life.
That's right.
And so how are you getting the community involved in this particular Beauty for Ashes ministry?
We have a couple of staff members. We have one in each prison, but the rest of the program is ran by volunteers. It is volunteers coming into the prison to teach the classes. We have volunteers that help them with the support system when they get out. We partner with other organizations. So, and Mally is a good example of that. I have no worries about her. She is definitely taking the steps that she's supposed to take, like go through the transitional home. So she's in Journey to a New Life. It's another program here in Kansas City that we encourage go to the next step of a transitional home. Then the community gets involved with mentoring, budget counselings, you know, going into your church, being part of your church community. So, you know, we get the community involved with what we do inside the prison and then actually becoming that support system on the outside.
So is there a long-term connection to this ministry or program, or is it just like a 30-day or 60-day, or is it just a lifetime commitment to the ministry?
So so you have to have at least a year left on your sentence on the inside for the program. So we're going to be with you for at least a year in the prison. Now, we have some people in our program that are never getting out of prison, but they're still part of what we're doing, and they're helping others get ready to go home. You know, that's their ministry in the prison as an inmate. So you have us for at least a year inside. And then outside, we're connected. We're available for the long term. You know, we're really helping within the first 6 months, really trying to stay, make sure they're following up. But we're available forever. So we have annual reunions, and they've grown every year as we've had ladies be out for years at a time. We come back as a family once a year and reunite.
And I think on your website, you talked about financial peace, and a lot of people, when they end up in prison, and their financial situation is in turmoil.
Yeah.
And how do you bring about that peace in terms of finances?
So that, did you get to take the financial piece?
I did. And it was amazing. It taught me how to budget and how to be disciplined in my finances and how to spend my money. You live like nothing so you could live like nobody, you know?
Right. Awesome. Dave Ramsey stuff.
Yes, Dave Ramsey.
Yeah. Oh, my wife is deep into that, you know, Dave Ramsey saying,
And it's awesome because these ladies do get these and you work with they're not allowed to have a job while they're in Beauty for Ashes. And so some of them are having to really sacrifice to be in our program because they have to live off the $7 state pay, too. So they really do get a chance to go, OK, how are you going to make that
last?
How
are you going to make that stretch? Yeah,
I mean, luckily, they got rid of cigarettes in Missouri, so we're not blowing money anymore. But, but you know, truly, so there's a chance to walk that out. But then now let's put it into practice now that you're on the outside. So we do parenting. We do budgeting. We do. You know, we learn how to study the word, but it's also life skills. So it's that life transformation for the first 4 months of really dealing with the past. And then the next 8 months with their class is all about that. Like, how do you parent your kids? How do you have boundaries in your relationships? How do you do your finances? How do you prepare for a job interview? Those
sure.
type of things.
And you alluded to the fact of getting rid of certain things that are negative, that's not healthy for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, cigarettes and other things that you have added in your life. And it's not only unhealthy, but it's financially it's unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how you focus on that? Do you instill in the to the individuals that you should stop smoking, or you should, you know, definitely stop drinking and using drugs? But
you know, I think we just keep instilling the truth of like who they are. We don't spend a lot of time on the you shouldn't, honestly, because that brings such condemnation.
Sure.
And so we really do say, you know, God wants the best for you, and then out of that, when you start to really know who you are, then you go, yeah, I want the best, and I know I'm now of an example to my kids. So I mean, if the ladies come out and start smoking again, I'm not gonna, you know, make
you're
anyone
not gonna
feel
condemn
bad.
Them. Yeah,
yeah. And even if there's a relapse, I mean, we've walked with many that come out and think, I want to have my cake and eat it too. I get it. I came out. It took me 10 years to get sober, so I'm not gonna beat you up about it. I'm just gonna love you through it.
Well, what if someone is listening right now and they might want to be a part of your program, and could you give them the information that how to contact you?
Yes. So if you want to visit our website, it is online at BF as in Frank. So BFA-ministry.org. You can go there, learn more about the program, and also there's a way to contact us there. Also, the phone number for the ministry is 816-721-2803. And so you can contact us through the website or call us directly.
Say that number one more time, just in case they was reaching
getting
for a
pen. It is 816-721-2803.
And also, I've invited you to the Penny Mill Foundation event coming up on July the 20th in the Blue Valley Park. So,
we're hoping to have a table there and information about that and some other programs we have going on.
So. Sure, because I think that would be an asset to the community to find out exactly about Beauty for Ashes.
Yeah.
And I think that's very empowering to not only just to be able to know this, but what you're doing and bringing that information to the community, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah, so if you have a loved one that's a female incarcerated in the state of Missouri, we're in both the prisons, so there's an opportunity for them. If they're not already looking into it, you can encourage them that this will change your life. It really will. And you don't have to be a Christian to be in our program.
There you go.
You can come from whatever. We're going to talk about Jesus, but you don't have to sign up for that. Just learn. I mean, I promise you, if you walk by the things he taught, you won't go back to prison, and you'll just learn to love people.
And that's what it's all about, love.
Exactly.
Because you can be doing a lot of things, but if you don't have love, you're not doing anything.
You're not doing nothing.
Yeah, right. I think there's a word that says you just assemble in the forest.
That's right.
ringing a bell, but there's no love. Now, we kind of mentioned about recidivism, and what are some of the ways that how you're reaching out to ladies that maybe have been a victim of just constantly returning back to prison?
Mm-hmm.
Do you reach out to them and say, what's going on?
Absolutely. So I encourage them all to find us on Facebook. And so that's usually a way I can tell. Like if I kind of stalk your pages. And so if I can see memes popping up every, 10 minutes in the middle of the night, then probably something's up. So then we'll reach out. And but the cool thing is, because they do have a community of support. So often I'll reach out and just say, we're loving on you, no shame, let's get a game plan, and then together let's call your PO. And so we'll make those phone calls together and just say, okay, this is the game plan. Can we avoid going back to prison?
There's just
a little slip here, but we've got this, and she's willing to take the steps. I'm not going to work harder than you do.
Yeah.
So I'll get the phone number. You make the call. You fill out
the
application.
Then
we know that there is. I mean,
the person know that they're not alone in what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I tell the ladies all the time, if it happens, please don't let shame hold you back. So often they'll feel like they failed because
shame and guilt. Yeah.
And so it is sometimes I have to do the step to reach out. And then sometimes they do end up back in prison, and that's okay too, because God is a God of a million chances.
Mistakes.
So come back to our program. We'll do it again.
Yeah. That's really great. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on now, Mallory. And I'm talking with Gina's guest, Mallory. And tell us a little bit about what's going on as it relates to your family and the program and what you're doing through the days, that's keeping you strong and keeping you focused.
Yeah, actually just finding good employment, which I'm employed now. And then the journey to a new life has absolutely helped me quite a bit as well. And so now I'm ready to move here in 5 weeks, move out to my own place.
Mm-hmm.
And Gina has just welcomed me into a place that will help me out to find a place to go and stability.
Uh-huh.
And getting connected into a church group is key for me. So I've done that and going to groups, AA groups, NA groups, just keeping myself focused on what the goals are that I have at hand, which is being sober, staying sober, being employed, and working.
When you mentioned about going to church, are you attending Beauty for Ashes, or just a church of your choice?
It's a church of my choice, but I'm actually looking for a home church right now, so.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. We're just about out of time, and could you give us that number again to Beauty for Ashes?
Yes, it's 816-721-2803. And I know they mentioned the website will be linked to KKFI's webpage, so you can find us through that as well.
There you go. Yeah. All right, and I'd like to thank you guys for being my guests here at Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 FM.
Thank you so much for having us. You too.
Sure.
God bless you.
It's the 420 Drug War News.
Currently the Director of Research and Development for the International Cannabis and Cannabinoids Institute. That's based in Prague, but I still live in Washington State.
Well, with that, we've begun the introduction of today's guest, Dr. Ethan Russo. He's an MD. He has a lot of credentials, a board-certified neurologist, psychopharmacology researcher, and former senior medical advisor to GW Pharmaceuticals, which is perhaps the top dog of the medical marijuana industry. With that, I want to welcome our guest, Dr. Ethan Russo. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, Dr. Russo, I wanted to put forward your credentials because you have worked with, and I hate to use the phrase, but the top dog of the industry, GW Pharmaceuticals. They've been headlong at this for over a decade now, have they not?
Well, yeah, actually, the company started in 1998, and I was a scientific advisor with them starting that year and came on full-time in 2003 for the next 11 years.
And they have put forward, I always try to pronounce this, let's see, Epidiolex? Is that the...
Close, yeah, Epidiolex. So that was actually their second product. The first, called Sativex, was a spray in the mouth combining extracts of a high THC chemovar, chemical variety of cannabis, and a high CBD chemovar of cannabis. And Sativex is approved in 30 countries outside the U.S. for treatment of spasticity and multiple sclerosis. Epidiolex is almost a pure cannabidiol product. And in 2018, it was approved by the Food and Drug Administration for treatment of two severe kinds of epilepsy, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and Dravet syndrome.
Well, you know, Dr. Russo, I think I knew that, that Sativex was the precursor, if you will, and mm-hmm. had been available. I was lucky enough, and gosh, it's been 14, 15 years ago, I entered Dr. Geoffrey Guy, who I think mm-hmm. was then the chairman or head scientist or something at GW, and they put him on the airwaves back when. And we talked about Sativex and how it's a two-pronged approach, right?
GW was really instrumental in bringing cannabidiol back to the fore.
Once again, that was Dr. Ethan Russo, one of the world's most experienced and learned individuals for cannabis medicine. I am Dean at DrugTruth.net.
Sitting here in my problem. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia and Compartiendo en Noche.